There's a very famous resettler that I want to just end with and make sure that everyone at least, I want you at least to be aware of him. How many of you have heard of Carlos Montezuma before today? Okay, a couple. Okay, that's good. Class of 1884, chemistry major. Okay. He was born in Arizona. He was a Yavapai. He was a group of people in central Arizona. He was born in the 1860s, not exactly sure of the date, but he was at and there was a period of warfare between tribes there. He was captured by a rival tribe, and he was sold. He was sold as a slave by chance to a white, an Italian immigrant, actually, a man named Gentile, G-E-N-T-I-L-E, who was a photographer. Okay? Carlos Gentile bought Carlos Montezuma, gave him his first name, Carlos, and made up Montezuma because he knew about Montezuma in Mexico and so on. And so he assigned him that name. And as a young boy, Carlos traveled with Father Carlos in his photography business. He traveled and went into towns and took people's pictures and so on and traveled around. We don't know much about his life until he was teenager years, 11, 12 years old, and the photographer fell on hard times, and he came in touch with, in contact with a Baptist minister in Urbana, Illinois named Stedman. And he left Carlos with the Stedmans here. And this was a minister who thought he was, you know, saving people and so on, a good person. And he raised Carlos through his teenage years, and he enrolled him in the academy. When the University of Illinois was first established, there was an academy here that was a sort of special high school that was kind of preparatory, a prep school. He learned English very quickly. He learned other languages very quickly. It turned out he was a brilliant student in mathematics. And in 1880, he entered the university as a freshman. He graduated in 4 years as a chemistry major. Pretty good. And this is his graduation picture. This is a blow-up, which is a little indistinct, but it shows him at a class picnic in 1884 in a canoe. And here's some of the summary of his life. You'll see on the last line that when he left University of Illinois, like a lot of University of Illinois graduates, he went to Chicago and looked for a job. He got a job in a pharmacy. He was a chemistry major. He was able to get a job fairly quickly. And then he enrolled in Chicago Medical College, which became Rush Presbyterian, eventually Rush University, Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's Medical Center. And he got his MD degree in 1889. Okay. He was not the first Indian to become an MD, but he was the first Indian male to get an MD degree in 1889. And he opened a practice in Chicago and developed a fairly successful practice on the south side of Chicago. A couple of quotations from essays that he wrote in the Illini, which was not a newspaper at that time. It was a literary magazine. He says, "How strange for a people once great and powerful to pass away from the land possessed by them and their fathers. For those who once made others tremble to dwindle away to a weak and helpless race upon the face of a country." Okay. How strange it must have felt for him to be a student here in the 1880s, okay? Surrounded by people who either knew nothing about his history or who had a distorted view of his history. Okay. Montezuma was not an evangelical Christian, but he had lived in a Christian household, and he had absorbed in his schooling a lot of ideas from mainstream American culture. And he had this idea that what Americans should do is to somehow repair the history that had been made, to somehow bring justice to his community. Okay? And he wrote about that. And so he writes here, "Let us write a page in our history that will atone for the thoughtless and hasty deeds of the past. That when read by future generations, it may shed a light which will cause the spots on that record to appear less dark." Sort of the chemist thinking here, you know. "Better that we entail a debt on our posterity than leave them an inheritance of shame." Okay? So a language of morality, which you can in some ways could trace to that, perhaps to that Baptist household that he grew up in, but now being directed not at converting Indians, but a language of morality being directed back to the rest of the student body and the rest of the population around him. Okay? So this resettlement of Illinois is not just people coming back, but it's also the introduction of a new voice, a new first voice, troubling voice, for the people who are the inheritors of Illinois, of Macon County or Cook County or any of the things we've been talking about here, to suddenly have this voice here. This is a recognizable voice, a voice very hard to ignore. Okay? So he wrote that as a senior in 1884. Pretty amazing. He goes on, he becomes a doctor, he becomes more and more involved and more and more determined to this idea of writing a new kind of history, of recovering or overcoming the problems of the past. He joins with other people like himself. There was at this point in 1911, there was a fairly large number, in the hundreds, not the thousands, of Indian people who had been to college, that had been to school, who joined Montezuma in this kind of argument against the majority culture. I edited a little book a year or so ago called Talking Back to Civilization. And these were people who were beginning to talk back to civilization, who had been hearing civilization talking to them, and they joined to form this organization. Then he forms his own newspaper. He forms a national newspaper called Wasaha, which was his Indian name. His original name was Wasaha. He goes on to oppose the draft in World War I, very unpopular position, but Indians were not citizens. And he said, if we're not citizens, we shouldn't have to fight in the army. We shouldn't have to be subject to the draft. He was not of draft age, so he was not jailed for resisting. And then, very interestingly, even though he lived in Chicago, he reestablishes contact with his relatives in Arizona. And eventually, even though he is supposedly a, quote, civilized, progressive Indian, a model for others, a doctor, all that sort of thing, he seeks to be re-enrolled with his community. He wants to become a part of them at the end of his life. And he gets tuberculosis in the 1920s. He goes back to what's now Fort McDowell, just north of Phoenix. And he's buried there, and his tombstone is there. And the people there still remember and revere him. This is a picture of him as a 50-some-year-old doctor in Chicago. I don't know much about his coming back to the university. It would be interesting to know about whether he returned. He wasn't very far away. But he was there. And I think what's interesting about him is not only this, that he represents this resettlement, which, again, Dr. Farnell is going to talk a lot more about as this process continues, but he represents a voice which is now commenting on that official version of history, okay, and is critiquing it. Just hang on one more thing. I want to show you one more item about, this is just another quotation here, about the draft. He says we should be citizens, and he explains why. And I have some formal questions, but I want to just show you one more thing, which probably many of you have seen before. How many of you have seen these pictures before? Come on, I'm just curious. Just how many hands up? Just, okay, 10 or so. These panels are published regularly, or they're less so now, but they have been published regularly by the Chicago Tribune, called Injun Summer, and they're accompanied by a poem. Which talks about how the Indians have all gone, and the Indians have all gone away. And we're sitting here at Injun Summer, and they see the smoke and sort of imagining the Indians. They're all dead, it says. Okay. So again, there's that official version going on, and you've got